think we will begin the meeting here. This is a hearing of the Property Tax Relief and Local Sales Tax Division, and I would like to welcome and thank everyone for coming out. It's a real pleasure to be here at North High School. And this is our seventh property tax hearing. Back on February 6th and 7th, we held six hearings throughout Minnesota, and this is our seventh one. And I think everyone probably recognizes that one of the biggest tax issues we have right now are rising property taxes. And just to get a little bit of a perspective on that, since 2002, property taxes in the state have gone from $4.5 billion to about projected for 2008, about $7.2 billion. That's about a $2.7 billion increase in property taxes in the last 6 years. And if you really look closely at the numbers, you will see that on residential homesteads, on our homes, that is up over 80% increase in property taxes in the last 6 years. And this division, we have a number of members here from the division. I'll have them introduce themselves in just a moment. We have worked very hard starting last year on a number of ways in which to try to reduce property taxes. But one thing we have found out loud and clear is that this is an issue that affects every area of this state. And we've heard from senior citizens on fixed incomes, young families, business owners, and people throughout the state on how it's impacting us. So we'll get into that a little bit later, but tonight we're here to hear from you, hear comments, hear any type of solution you might have to lowering property taxes. But I'm very thankful to Representative Dominguez for being a host for us tonight and appreciate his efforts for reducing property taxes that he's shown the last year. So if you would care to have some opening comments, but thanks for being here and hosting.
Well, thank you. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're good. Oh, now it went off. Did I do something? I moved something, but no, it's not on. Well, here we go. Take that one.
Can you hear me now? All right, good, good. Well, I just want to welcome you to the District 58B and to North High Community School. This is one of the schools that I graduated from, North High, Polar. And again, I want to thank you for coming out. We had sent out several notices to the media, and I was hoping to see more people to come out because property taxes is a big issue here, especially on the north side of Minneapolis. Of course, we're losing a lot of through foreclosures, but our property taxes are going up with downtown Minneapolis and north side. And so I asked Representative Paul Marcourt if he would open up to a hearing over here on the north side, and he did, and I appreciate that very much, Paul, and thank you for bringing the committee out to the north side of Minneapolis. I appreciate you very much for coming again, and I just wanted to say that also we have in the audience Council Member Paul Austro, that from the council. Some of the other members couldn't make it. They have other meetings going on, so they wanted to say that they're with us, and they will catch up, and hopefully they will get the minutes of this meeting and help out with every which way they can. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to the committee chairman, and again, thank you for coming, and hopefully you will express to the committee what you really feel about your property taxes. This is a good opportunity because they're taking notes, and not only just taking notes, they really want to do something about property taxes here. And I just want to make one last comment. We, as members last year, proposed $100 million in property tax last year, but it was vetoed by our governor. It was property tax relief for all of us, and so that's why they're here. They want to hear those concerns again, with how people are dealing with their property taxes. So be honest and come on up and speak in the mic. And again, this is very important for all of us to understand where we're at. So thank you again.
And what I'd like to do now is thank you very much, Representative, and for your hospitality tonight. And I'd like to have everyone introduce themselves, including staff, if you would. But we have other representatives, and we'll work down this way, and then we'll move it back the other way.
I'm Representative Robin Brown. I come from the Albert Lea area, which is southern Minnesota, and I would like to thank Representative Dominguez for hosting this tonight. Gives me a wonderful opportunity to see the folks here in Minneapolis and get to hear their views and their needs. I think it's just so very important to have Greater Minnesota and Minneapolis work together. So thank you for this opportunity, Representative Dominguez.
I'm Joe Mullery, and I am very familiar with this area. I grew up on the north side, lived here my whole life, and I represent the area from 26th on up north and the rest of the north side.
I'm Karen Baker, and I'm a staff person. I work in house research on property taxes.
Good evening. My name is Kathy Schell. I also am a staff person. I work as a fiscal analyst, taking a look at how much revenue and how much expenditures we have in the committee.
Yes, and I'm Steve Hines. I'm an analyst with House Research as well, also working in property taxes. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming out. I'm Diane Loeffler. I'm a state representative from Northeast Minneapolis, just across the river. And I should point out, as the commission, I don't think our chairman did, that this is the seventh of tours that the property tax division has taken to different parts of the state, the suburbs. It's the first one in the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul. So we're honored to have our peers here learning about the concerns of area residents and businesses.
My name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Committee Legislative Assistant for the Property Tax Division, and I also am the Legislative Assistant to Paul.
Sarah, you were just from down there, care to introduce yourself? All this staff always makes us look good as representatives, so we always treat them well, but thanks for getting everything set up to the staff. Just to show you how serious we are about hearing from you tonight, is last year the Property Tax Division had a citizen comment, property tax comment line. And you could either send in messages through email, or you could call them in or send in letters. And last year we received almost about 800 suggestions or ideas on how property, help me lift that, how property taxes were impacting us. But here's the book. And also, not only did we look through all of those, but the committee picked out 20-some ideas that we thought were pretty workable. And we then took six ideas after that, we whittled them down, and put them into what was called a citizens' property tax relief bill. There were six ideas. And we had residents whose ideas were in here actually come to the committee meeting to testify on this bill. So I thought, what a great example of ideas literally going from the kitchen table to the committee table. And three of those six ideas actually made the final bill that Representative Dominguez was talking about that ended up getting vetoed. But had the governor not vetoed that, there would have been three of these ideas. So we do take that very serious and hope that anyone who cares to speak tonight, we won't leave tonight until everyone's had a chance to speak, and I think we'll have plenty of time for that. So we're going to start with that. And the first one on the list is we have Council Member Ostro. And if you would come forward and also state your name again, because we got to keep track of all this. But good evening, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for being here in Minneapolis, and I want to commend all of you for your commitment. I know from speaking with Mr. Ranieri, who heads our Intergovernmental Relations Department, just how incredibly quick the session's going for you, and for you to have the commitment to have all of these sessions in the midst of all that, I think is really shows your level of commitment. I've been as the president of the Minneapolis City Council and now the chair of our Ways and Means Budget Committee, frankly, kind of in the eye of the storm of many of our financial challenges, and chief among those challenges is the challenge we have with property tax. We're proud of much of the work we've done in terms of government reform and making sure that our citizens get as much as possible for their property tax dollars. But there are a number of factors that have really made it difficult. For the last several years, the property tax increase in the levy that we passed has been about 8% a year. Now, that's bad enough. But when you look at some of the other factors I'll get into, what that has translated for many of our residents is as much as a 15 or even 20% hike in their property taxes. Some are seeing as much as a doubling of their property taxes over a five-year period. And so you, I think, Mr. Chair, spoke to just how serious a challenge that can create. There is a handout that you either already have or will have. I think it has been distributed to you. And we just wanted to make a couple quick points tonight. One is that the changes in tax rates that took place has really made a major difference in terms of the portion of property taxes in Minneapolis paid for commercial, industrial versus residential uses. And you'll see that back in 1997, we had 56% of our property taxes came from commercial and industrial property, only 32% from residential property. And by 2008, that had kind of stood on its head. In 2008, for this tax year, again, it's almost exactly the reverse, 57% of our property taxes are now coming from residential properties, only 34% for commercial and industrial. And you'll see on the bottom half of this sheet that we've had strong market value increases, but they have slowed down over time, and certainly over the last couple of years in particular, and that certainly has had an impact on the ability and the capacity of our residents to pay. And then this second page here shows you how property taxes have replaced local government aid. If you look at the year 2003, in that year our local government aid was right around $120 million and our general fund being at about $280 million, or our levy plus aid is about $280 million. So in that year, local government aid was about 40% of our levy plus aid. If you go to now our current year, 2008, we have about $80 million there in terms of local government aid and about $350 million in terms of levy plus aid. So it's considerably less than 25%, somewhere between 20 and 25% coming from local government aid. So we've almost seen a reduction by 50% of the proportion of our levy plus aid that comes from local government aid, and that has been replaced with the property tax. So those are some key points I wanted to mention to you tonight. I, again, appreciate your being here tonight. You have a lot of people that I think want to share their views, and I'll yield to them, but would also welcome any questions if you have any.
Very good. Any questions for Council Member Ostro? And one thing I want to remind people is that you came in, there's some handouts here. And on one page of the handouts, you can see the cuts in local government aid. And since numbers from 2003, the actual cumulative cuts around the state has been around $726 million. Now, that's not counting inflation. That's actual cuts. And so I know sometimes our city council members and mayors, and I was a former one myself as a mayor, we get blamed for some of these high property taxes, and maybe at times we deserve that. But I will say that a huge amount of that is when you cut local government aid like that, You have to make it up somewhere. And one of the things you see with the statistics is that if you count, if you look at city revenues and put them on an inflationary basis, they're flat or going down, total city revenues. And so the big difference has been, though, as the aids have gone down, it's got to be made up with the property tax portion of those revenues. That becomes higher. So some of this statistics are in there, but I don't see any questions. And thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Carol Becker. And I don't know, which one is that here coming forward? Oh, that's just...
And this would be Lydia,
all right.
She was the one crying earlier in response to some of the things that Paul was saying.
And those LGA cuts are sad.
They are very sad.
Yes, they are. So she's learning quickly.
My name's Carol Becker. I'm on the Board of Estimate and Taxation, an office that you probably have never heard of unless you are from the city of Minneapolis. And even if you are from the city of Minneapolis, you probably haven't heard of it either. We set the maximum property tax levy for the city of Minneapolis for the city council, for the park board, and the now defunct library board. And that means that one day a year we have to make a very difficult decision about how high property taxes should go, because we set the maximum. They can come under, but we at least set that maximum. And that means that I actually go out and I talk to people about the property taxes. And the pain is all over the place. And part of it is the commercial industrial shift, that when the IDS's taxes went down 60% over the last 10 years and my taxes went up over 100% over the last 10 years, part of that is because of the decisions that the legislature made. In addition, the local government aid cuts have meant that we've had to increase property taxes even more. But part of what Paul didn't talk about, a couple of things. One is that it also has meant that we're not keeping up with some really serious things. We're not keeping up with our street repair. Our alley repair, we cut police, and crime went up, and that meant real people got real hurt. And we still haven't recovered from those things. And so, you know, I go out and I talk to people, and on one hand, like me, I'm a public employee, and I'll tell you, my union settled for a 0, a 3, and a 3. So I'm actually working for 6% less than I did just 3 years ago. My property taxes have gone way up, and I go out and talk to people about the services that we're not providing. And it's really, really a bad thing that we can't keep our city just where it should be, much less be moving it ahead. Sorry, I have to watch where she's going. a couple things I did also want to throw in. One is pension reform. In Minneapolis, we have to levy for pensions. And how pensions are set up in Minneapolis are... Okay. She's waving. set up such that our pension boards want to hit a home run. And if they don't hit a home run, it falls back on a property taxpayer. And so we're looking at substantial increases in our property taxes because of how our pensions are structured. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely believe that people should get the pensions that they're due. But because of how we have the system set up, we're losing property taxes that we need to do things like fix roads and hire police because of how the system is set up. So I'd say, first off, commercial industrial shift is killing us. And if you had time to look at some of the pension issues, that would be very helpful, because for Minneapolis, they're very, very substantial. And then local government aid, because we're expected to be a regional center. We have 150,000 people who come in here to work every day, and, you know, they're not living here and paying the property tax. I'm paying for them. It's fair the state kicks in something for us to be a regional center. And when local government aid gets cut, we can't do that. So local government aid, pensions, and the commercial industrial shift are kind of my 3 points that I wanted to bring up tonight. So thank you very much. And if anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Carol. Any questions for Carol?
Carol is one of our better informed citizens in the city of Minneapolis. And for the citizens who are here and who are struggling to understand how this complicated property tax system works, if you ever go to the Minneapolis issues list about the time the city is setting its budget, Carol, as an elected official, does, I think, the best job I've ever seen of explaining property taxes 101 on a bulletin board of concerned citizens from throughout the city, and that's a real art form. So thank you so much for what you do in terms of helping the rest of us communicate property tax issues and the relationship of state and local governments to everyone else who lives in this area.
Thank you very much. I have to admit my campaign slogan was geek is good. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next we have Lisa Lasgar. Is Lisa here? That was someone from earlier. Okay, how about a Dan Brody? Dan Brady. All right. And welcome.
Well, thank you for letting me come and speak to you. I am a constituent of Diane Loeffler's. I live in Northeast in the Stonehill neighborhood. And I'm really actually quite happy where I live. It's a very pleasant neighborhood. And I bought the house that I bought with my brother Shannon in the year 2000. And I just want to give you an idea how fast the taxes have gone up on this property. And I also have in my possession pictures of other residents in our neighborhood to give you an idea, and I can provide it later if you're interested, to see what it looks like in Northeast, at least on my block and across the street. And know that for whatever reason, I pay the most taxes, property taxes, for my general neighborhood, other than the multi-unit fourplexes that are across the street. But that's a different issue. I do want to discuss that in part two. Like I said, in the year 2000, I bought the house, and the taxes were $1,638. I pulled off the Hennepin County tax website what my 2008 will be. It's going to be $4,449. Now, I grant you that I did some improvements. I pulled a permit through the city, and it cost me $1,300 to pull this permit. And the city thought I'd be spending $70,000. The reason was that when my brother and I jointly bought this place, it was considered a duplex without a front staircase. The egress was horrible, and he was only able to have 500 square feet. So I told my brother that we will expand it to make it as big as the foundation of the house. So we brought it from 500 square feet to 1,000 square feet. So the city assessed us a total of $25,000 in a property tax increase. And that so there's a certain percentage in the valuation of the house in that. The house went from $107,000 to $367,000 in that eight-year period. I realized I probably maybe paid too much originally for that house, but, you know, back in the early 2000, the prices were rising pretty fast. In the last few years, as you well know, the house prices, well, in certain neighborhoods have plummeted. It comes to reason to think that maybe houses, the valuation of houses should, we should not have really property taxes. We should probably go back to the Minnesota miracle back in the 70s when, you know, the state was taking a good share of our property taxes, and therefore the valuation based on subjectivity is more or less eliminated. I think if we did what we did back then and shift the property taxes to people who make a ton of money, you know, and there are those in our state that do, especially over the $100,000, $200,000. You can cut it off at $250,000 as far as I'm concerned. But those people, you know, they hardly pay their burden. And unfortunately, people like me who had a taxable income of $16,000 in 06, and I pay the most property taxes, it's just like bewildering, absolutely bewildering. And I grant you, maybe I should never have bought the house, but I couldn't live, you know, with the woman I lived with, who I met in Poland, in the same house that my mother lived in or lives in. So, you know, it was out of necessity that I decided to buy this place. On the issue about the fourplexes, and I have evidence to that too, I'll be paying $4,400 in 08, and the fourplex across the street will be paying $5,300. The gentleman who owns that place has it homestead. He has a four-unit place, and half of it is homestead, and he actually doesn't live there. I tried to Google where he lived, and I think he lives on Summit Avenue in St. Paul. I think he has a relative living there, either a nephew or some young adult male. I'm not really sure, but I don't think it's fair for a fourplex to be homestead in that respect unless he actually owned it. And that person who lives there doesn't own the fourplex. The fourplex next to that pays $3,000 more in property taxes than that gentleman I'm speaking of. So I think there's inequality that is occurring. And grant you, it's hard to find that unless you really do the research or have somebody go house to house and house and see, wow, this one is only paying $5,300 and this one's paying $8,300. And they're exactly the same. Fourplexes built at the same time. And I have, information here, so if anybody's interested, they can see it and see the discrepancy. See, what else would I like to say? Well, that's basically it, Oh, I did calculate, the percentages of, what I paid, and in 07, I'm not going to qualify for a tax rebate because the taxes only went up 11.6%. And I know that Diane mentioned that, the cutoff is 12%. The year prior to that, it went up 18%. The year prior to that, 20%, 22% for the year before, and 17%. But last year, I won't be qualifying. I think it's so unfair. This whole property tax system it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. I think it's a lot easier to go through people's income tax, what they report, and have them shoulder the burden. That's all I have to say, but I'm willing to have the information provided for whoever really wants to take a look at it. Thank you.
Dan, could you just stay there for just a second? And thank you so much for the statistics and the testimony. And one of the things we really worked on last year was basing property taxes more on the ability to pay. And right now, you did mention a targeting program where your property taxes go up over 12%, but there's actually another one is a property tax refund, which bases, you get a refund if your property taxes are very high in comparison to your income. And you mentioned a $16,000 income. I'm willing to bet you would get quite a bit back on that.
The problem is I jointly own that house with my brother. And he got a big severance from Pioneer Press when they bought out all those people. I don't know if you recall in the paper. But and his income level really skewered a lot of things. I'll explain to you another story. My mother received a payout 15 years ago in an auto accident on a police chase. She was rear-ended by the people that was being chased. She got money and put it in the stock market. And because she's on disability, I brought her up from her when she was working at the Rochester Mayo Clinic. I brought her up to have her live in one of my duplex that I also own. The reason why I had to leave because my mom moved in. And she doesn't qualify for any of this because she took a huge loss in the market, and this capital gains thing killed her. So she couldn't qualify for a renter's tax credit, even though she only earned $19,000 from she works part-time at General Mills tasting the food, the frozen foods, before it heads out to the marketplace. You know, that's what a dietitian does when they retire. They go and taste food. But the fact is, she only earned $19,000 from that and $12,000 from her non-taxable Social Security. And then she had a $23,000 tax write-off or capital gains situation for losses. And that put her over the top. That made her look like she actually earned $61,000. A 70-year-old lady who's tasting food at General Mills is making $61,000. It's not real money. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, I try to help her out and get her a tax credit because I declare the income she pays me. In other words, she pays $1,000 for a 3-bedroom, first-floor unit, you know, and I'm doing my part to make sure the state knows that, you know, I get income from people, including my mom. So I declare it as income, and I get taxed on that. Basically, that 16 grand is basically the income I got because the job that I currently have, I'm a mover, and I'm being clobbered with this subprime mess and the equity crunch because people can't move. I don't know. Mm-hmm. How often you see moving trucks out there anymore, but people are not moving. People are staying where they live, except for the people who are being foreclosed on, and of course they just throw their stuff into pickups and leave. So,
well,
there's some major inequalities here.
Well, I can say, and Representative Wappler and others on the committee, but she was spearheading a portion of the committee, was working on getting the word out on the property tax refund program, even though you may not qualify, a lot of people don't even know it exists. And so we're really been working on that in the Department of Revenue's doing a lot better. And I will say to anyone out here right now, if you'd like more information on that program, I'll give you a phone number rather than just, I'll give you our office's phone number, but it's 651-296-6829. So 296-6829 if there's any questions. But we had a plan last year that would have said if your property taxes are more than 2% of your income, you would get a new homestead credit state refund to buy down your taxes. And I think it maxed out at $2,500. We had it up there quite a ways. So like in your situation, regardless of your brother on this, but it was just you would out of that $4,400 that you're paying, you'd probably pay $2,000 less. You'd get a credit of about $2,000 probably on that. And as you say, I mean, it shouldn't be any fault of yours that your home value, what, went from 167 to 367 or
no,
something like that?
107,000.
107.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're living in the same home, but the market around you has driven that up, and that shouldn't drive you out of your home.
Well,
and so our program would, you know, keep people in their homes.
I honestly believe this. That if you go back to the Minnesota Miracle back in the 70s, where the state more or less collect the tax revenue from the income taxes and then take the burden off the cities, then maybe I won't have this burden because I foresee that in 10 years, when I'm 58 years old, my property taxes on my house, this little house that has 1,200 square feet and 1,000 square feet upstairs, that my brother lives in, which, you know, we bought as a duplex. I live downstairs, he lives upstairs. It's going to cost me $10,000. I mean,
yeah.
It, based on the $500 increments that it goes up every year. That's unconscionable.
Appreciate your comments very much. You've hit it right on the head with many of those, so thank you. Next on the list is Renee Pfeiffer. And then please just state your name and then make sure you speak into the mic so we can all hear you.
My name is Rennie.
Rennie, okay, very good. Rennie, very
whenever
good.
You got two E's, it's long. Okay, Rennie.
Very good.
Basically, I'm almost quoting the gentleman that was up here. A little bit different, but same. I'm just going to say it in different words. Same thing he said, but in different words. The taxes that are going up are tied to my mortgage. So when the mortgage goes up, it's going up partly because of my taxes. So when my taxes go up, my mortgage goes up. So you imagine me being a canary and my mortgage is going up because my taxes are going up. Well, if I can't pay my taxes, usually I lose my house. Well, I haven't lost my house, so that means somebody else lost their house. And they lost their house, and they lost their house, and they're where we are right now. People are losing their houses. Now, not all because of taxes, partly because of taxes. And I sold my stock in Northwest Airlines, but I got lucky to buy at 45 cents, went up to $3.75. What I took out to pay on our bills so we wouldn't lose our house. So we're still in the house. We're hitting our 401k, well, not 401k, RRA, will be next month again if the market don't turn around, jobs don't come up. You want to give people money, but you don't want to give people jobs. You got to figure if you're going to take money that I'm paying on the house for taxes, maybe you need to be creating some jobs. And because you are people losing their houses, so they can't pay for their houses because they don't have a job. And then when they sell their stock, like the gentleman said, once you sell that, you got to pray that that tax becomes greater, because once you sell your stock and it made a profit, and you can do the math yourself, 45 cents, stock went up to $3.75, and you sold that stock, the tax comes around and you file your, you're going to get hit. And so we don't get no house rebate credit. The tax man said that ain't in the cards for us because we made too much money because we're trying to save our house so it don't get foreclosed and the taxes are steady going up.
Thank you very much. Anyone have any questions? You have a question, Dan? Okay. So thank you very much. And I think there's a lot that could share your story. So in it. Okay. So thank you very much. Rex Newman, did you?
Hello, I'm Rex Newman. I live in Brooklyn Center, actually. Been there for about 17, 18 years, and I was in Robbinsdale for about 7 or 8 years before that, and I love North Minneapolis, by the way. I love taking the bus through town from time to time.
Could you speak a little more into the mic?
Oh, there you go. Okay. And so I'm coming at this also as a homeowner. I don't know a lot about CNI and that part of it, but I've been kind of involved with the District 281 school district a little bit since the referendum failed, trying to raise the property taxes there to cover the increased operating costs. So we're looking at closing schools, as is Osseo and some others. And so I appreciate this venue. I've always wanted to see North High School, so I'm seeing a little piece of it here.
Very
and,
good.
And plus, it's a safe environment for me because I figure I'm... It's darn good guess. I'm probably the only Republican here. And you know what happens to Republicans that step out of line this year. So, it's not a good year for that. So, my perspective is I'm old enough to remember the Minnesota Miracle that another gentleman talked about, and I've seen the Minnesota Miracle and everything that's happened since then, some minor attempts in the 80s and 90s, and then more recently the big plan of Jesse Ventura, which also was a, in effect, shifted some education money from the property tax to the state funding. And quite frankly, if all these buy-down approaches had worked, I don't think we'd be here tonight. I think it just seems to be a threshold of pain with property taxes, and whenever we buy them down, everybody's happy for a while, and then forces happen. We get fluctuations in the economy and the markets, and it just kind of slowly creeps back up to that threshold of pain, and here we are again. And so I guess I don't really think that's the ultimate answer. That said, I don't think property taxes are evil. You know, I think if I had a favorite tax, it might be the property tax because I can see where the money goes. I see a police car and fire trucks and parks, and I get water and sewer and courts and city government and any number of services for that money. If If I give it to you guys for the state, I might get a road. I might get a gorilla exhibit at the zoo. You know, who knows? But if I give it to the feds, I get a $700 toilet seat. There's a really close connection between what I'm spending and what I'm getting, and I think we should kind of almost build on that if that's possible. The problem with, of course, is that the way we do the system now, they fluctuate greatly, and for a number of factors. Perhaps you've all seen that Colleen Needles little program that she did that when we did Truth and Taxation last year. I saw it at two different venues where she was explaining the 14 things that go into the formulas and why your taxes might go down or up a lot. And we've got a lot of factors in that, and some of the factors I don't think are really relevant to the property. I, for example, don't know why it should matter all that much how much you make, how much the owner of the property makes. The property should kind of speak for itself almost, and if it's a $200,000 house on lot X, and it turns over from a guy that makes 50 grand to 70 grand, I don't know why the tax should change, net tax, but another subject. What I'd like to suggest to you is most of all, is that you simplify things a little bit. For example, if you look at the statements, there's some little extra things. There's a solid waste management fee, and there's a watershed something or other. And can we get it down to just school, county, and city, and whatever other those small amounts? Let's build a county or build a city directly, and not confuse us with them. Number two, I'd say stabilize them. And by that, I mean you had an earlier person talk about his valuation going up from, $107,000 to over $300,000. That's absurd. When I bought my house, there's nothing in my deed or my mortgage or any document that says I get to live in that house forever if I can't pay the taxes or the insurance or if rates go up or down or and so on. But I think I'm entitled to some expectation that those costs will be manageable, that when I bought the house in 1990, my property taxes, I think, were about $1,800. And now they're, I think, around $3,600. So it's about doubled in 18 years. But at least that's predictable. I've been fortunate. I guess I haven't seen these kinds of fluctuations we've heard about here tonight. But that's kind of how it should work. And maybe part of the problem is that we are doing this property tax assessment every year, playing the market and so forth. What would be wrong, for example, of saying, all right, you bought the house in 1990, you paid $150,000 for it, and okay, we'll just add inflation or something on that level to it every year. We're not going to send the assessor out to see if you remodeled your dining room, or we're just going to, just add to it a little bit, but give the property owner some stability. You still have to do the proration. It could go up more than that for other reasons, but going from 100 to 300, the man's doing the right thing. He's improving a property in your city, and you kick him in the shorts for it. That doesn't make any sense. People are willing to stay in your city, and I speak generally, whatever city we're talking about. Let's reward the person that stays there a long time and improves his property and wants to help the community grow. I mean, that's what truly helps. If you got people moving in and out every 3 years, that doesn't help. So, finally, I'd like to say that property taxes should be dedicated to things that directly relate to property. And that's real easy with things like sewers and parks and so forth, as I mentioned. But also in the property tax system at the county level, we have some health care issues and some welfare issues. And, of course, the big one, the public schools. We've got, in effect, tuition rolled into that number. And that doesn't have really anything to do with owning property, per se. It can affect your property values if you have good schools versus bad schools, of course, or what are perceived as such. I think this isn't the answer. And I thought that's frankly what the big plan was all about, was to kind of get that a little more separated. But so if I could give you a suggestion on the schools, maybe we should divide that in half a little bit and say, all right, the property tax portion of funding, or the property tax goes for the school buildings and the facilities, plow the parking lot and heat the building and that sort of thing, sort of the what we might loosely call anything that isn't a non-per-pupil kind of expense. But everything else, maybe refer that to the committee that's hearing the PS Minnesota proposals. Look, if it's per pupil, if we're talking about teachers and library books and textbooks, and arts and athletics and whatever else, that really belongs, in the state realm and, through the various taxing mechanisms there. But let the property tax take care of the facilities. And I think that would also help when we get into these, why are you closing my school kind of arguments. If the district wants to step it up a little bit and say, I know it doesn't make economic sense to keep that extra elementary open, but we're willing to go a little further. We can do that locally. We don't have to involve you. If you're taking care of the teachers and everything else, let's do it that way. So, and I think that too, you get some of these what Lyndon Carlson calls cost drivers that are hard to control, like healthcare spending and school enrollments, can vary things quite a bit too. Just get some of those things that are hard to control out of the property tax, and just say again, let's manage the land and the facilities. That's what I'd like to see you do. And again, assuming I'm in safe hands here, I'd also like to see you consider removing this requirement for referendum on the school boards. They're a unit of local government. We elect them just like the county and the city. If they want to, they should be free to set limits or set operating levies to what they need to actually run the schools. And if we think they're spending too much, well, that's a separate issue. We can vote them out of office or whatever. But we're wasting a lot of time running referendums. And what do we have? 99 out of the 340 went for referendum this past year. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. And frankly, as a Republican, I can tell you, when I stepped back a few years, well, the money got increased anyway. It's not like some of my friends think we're holding down costs. No, we're not. Empirically, it seems to always come out in the wash anyway. So we ultimately do what we need to do. And so let's let these elected officials do the job. It's a bonding year. You're not really supposed to be doing some of that other stuff anyway. It'd be a good year to look at that one. Just that on its own. Just say, how about just letting the school boards, set their operating levies where they ought to be. Now, if they want to build a new school, a true bonding type of issue, that's separate. But it's a shame to put Robbinsdale or more especially even Osseo, what they're going through, having to close two or three schools this cycle. Or what shouldn't be, a very large increase in property tax. So give them the authority. And with that, thank you. I'll be happy to send you a little email, Paul. Without objection, I'll revise and extend my remarks.
You've been watching too much C-SPAN.
C-SPAN, yes. Yes.
So thank you. As Representative Dominguez here has a question.
Yes, sir.
My question that you brought up as far as property taxes for the schools, are you somewhat saying that we should dedicate a portion of the property taxes directly towards the schools, like we did with the transportation? We did it for roads, highways, bridges.
No, I don't think I'd go that far. I just would say that that line item, when I get my statement every year, I get there's a city number, there's a county number, and there's a school board number, there's public school district number, and whatever amount of money that raises goes to the buildings and the facilities, the things that are more square foot related, shall we say, but the expenses that are the per pupil kinds of expenses, which are largely the payroll ones and so forth, that I think should be, general fund or the big education bill. And again, I know another committee is hearing something that PS Minnesota is putting together, and I told there are reforms there. I've seen the little red book on school finance, and wouldn't be hard to improve on that. but that's what I'd suggest. I just think those kinds of expenses especially are more predictable. That even if you know, granted you're going to see some spikes in utility rates and so forth, but by and large, you know, it doesn't fluctuate as much with enrollment and other factors. And what I'd, again, like to see in the property tax is predictability. And I think a couple others would like to see that, too, that, you know, it shouldn't be doubling in 5 years, no matter what happens. You know, that's just crazy. You know, we're doing something wrong.
Well, thank you so much for those very thoughtful ideas. Any other questions or comments for Rex? All right. Thank you very much. Next, we have Eva Young.
Well, welcome to Minneapolis, and thank you for coming here for this hearing. And I just wanted to talk about, you know, the recent bills you passed in the sales tax and the if that Legacy Act actually passes, how that's going to be an indirect property tax increase, because the city and the county pay sales tax right now. And so what the city's doing, and then we get LGA. So the city pays sales tax to the state. Then the city goes and begs and pleads to the state for LGA. And then the state constantly says, well, we don't want to give any money to Minneapolis because Minneapolis has this sanctuary city rule. Or we don't want to give any money to Minneapolis because Minneapolis offers domestic partner benefits. None of this kind of stuff is of the business of state legislators, in my opinion. The city should be able to run the city in the way, you know, this is kind of a city sovereignty issue. But my question is, you know, with all this back and forth, why not just exempt the city and the county from the state sales tax? And then, you know, we might not need, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but the city might have much less need for LGA and might actually, you know, and if the city comes out ahead with that, then certainly it's worth advocating. And I've only seen Republican legislators push for that. I haven't seen DFL legislators push for that. And it's surprising considering that why aren't Minneapolis legislators looking at that issue?
Well, I have to tell you, Eva, that that the first bill I ever got a hearing as a freshman was on that, because I was a former mayor and they pushed me out there to do that. And I remember the first hearing, and Chairman Ron Abrams was up there, and there was like five of us who had that bill, and Representative George Castle, who was a Republican, went up there with the Republican chair. And Representative Abrams just gave him the 1-2. And I'm thinking, my goodness, this is a Republican he's doing. And I was like the third one up on the same bill. Luckily, Representative Abrams had left the room by the time I got there. And he wasn't chairing. He was actually on the committee that was a subcommittee of that. At any rate, I remember the cost at that time, and this was just for cities. I don't think it was for counties. Yeah. But I think it would cost the state about $105 or $110 million at the time that they would lose in revenue.
Okay.
And so the time to do that, and back then we had a little bit of a surplus in 01 that first year, you could do that. But now it would be really difficult to do. But I remember at the time when you look at when you got an extra $110 million or some extra money, you want to do other things, then it just isn't real appealing to give back this. It just doesn't political clout again. It would help the cities, and there would be an amount that they would save. But every year you do see these bills coming through, and I just politically it's just tough to do, especially when you're in a deficit, but even a surplus, it's a lot more appealing to do other things politically, and it kind of comes up. And I think that started, was that like in 1991 they added that, or was that the half cent?
I don't know.
There was a while where cities wasn't, and I think they put that on. Schools don't have to pay it, I don't believe. They don't have to pay
the sales tax.
No, and
the University of Minnesota doesn't pay for it. And,
but it's an excellent point, because actually that what you're saying is the rationale being used by all the ones who bring the bills forward is you really
it just goes around and just costing taxpayers more
right.
because they have to.
Plus the lobbying. It's a very inefficient way. The other thing I wanted to say is that there was recently a court case about nonprofits paying, whether they would be have to pay for property tax. I think that they, mm-hmm. I think nonprofits should. I mean, they're using the services. And they're using the and then the other thing is whenever you're considering things like giving, say, Target, I think, is asking for a some kind of TIF thing in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, or something, and then the Mall of America. Every single one of those things means that my property taxes go up and their property taxes go down. And what they're getting, as I understand, is that basically with this TIF funding is that it's like saying all their property tax is going to pay for their mortgage. Well, I would love it if my property tax would go to pay down the principal on my mortgage. But it doesn't. But, and then there, of course, was the stadium tax,
yeah.
which, again, that was also an increase in property, an indirect increase in property tax for Minneapolis, and it also was legislators who didn't live in Minneapolis voting to increase our property taxes and sales taxes, which I still resent very much. And so I guess I just hope you... reconsider that, and especially the urban legislators pushed to. Urban legislators, I think that you have the numbers to pass a bill that would do that. Actually, between urban and Duluth and the other cities.
Well, I'm not sure that my greater Minnesota peers have as much discussion about stadium financing as those of us here do. I can't have a town meeting even years after we passed it without us getting into the ins and outs of it. But I can say, actually, Eva, I voted against it. Many of the city legislators did. But there's only 11 House members out of 134 from Minneapolis, and there's another handful from St. Paul. And I have to say that when that passed, it was with the political support and request of our county commissioners, which made it difficult. But it was also all kinds of people who would never have to pay it. I had one greater Minnesota legislator come up and give me a big hug and said, thank you, Hennepin County, because I can vote for a bill and my people will never pay for it. And that's, to me, not fair, but that's the reality. But the numbers are such that with the demographics, we really are a smaller part of the 134 than you might think.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, Margaret Anderson Kelleher was a big part of passing that thing, and so was Linda Higgins, who happens to represent me, or not represent me, as you might say, but thank you.
Thank you, Eva. You bet. I think I get my glasses on. Next, we have Louis Dominguez. And good evening.
Thank you for listening to me. I live across the street, and I just got to tell you a little bit about myself. I graduated from the old Ooze and retired. Been in the neighborhood my entire life. I guess I was sitting back there, and I just there's a couple things I really want to say, and part of it, I understand a little bit about the political aspect of the taxes and all that. And I empathize with a lot of these people that are here. And I'm really sorry that there's more of you up there than there is back here. I guess my main thought was the need for the taxes. And I'm just a plain Louie, But it was not that long ago that we increased the values of our houses and then our taxes went up. All of a sudden, my property... value went down and my taxes are still up there. I was just wondering, maybe you can answer these questions after I'm done here, but like the baseball park and the the other stadiums that are going up, and we're kind of like chipping in. And like I said, I've been around for like almost 60 years here, and I've seen the Reagan thing going on, and you know how it went down, prosperity with the Clintons, and you know, it's just been like a roller coaster. Right now, I feel that are we trying to keep up with the Joneses? You know, when I see a bicycle bridge being built to cost in excess of $4 or $5 million, and there's more need for a park for kids to go to school. I work for the city of Minneapolis, so I don't get in trouble, but we have an asphalt plant there. I'm really concerned about, and I'm wondering about generating jobs. Well, when you start to think about knocking the asphalt plant down and you go buy asphalt in another area, the way the fuel is right now, it generates me as a taxpayer to kind of question what's really going on with management. They could generate jobs by keeping that plant open, hiring maybe another 15 people. We had one of our people in public works say, we only have $50 million and they're going to build a new complex right in that area right there for them, for the offices, for management. And I thought, geez, what a waste of money. Governor Plenty had said that last February that we had a surplus of some money. I have yet to see or anything written as a citizen where that money went. I question the management. I question a lot of politicians. I question a lot of things. But I know the need for paying my taxes are there. But I think if we take alternative roads, try to develop some jobs, get some people working. And I know it comes from the top administration. No offense, Republican administration. But part of the way I feel is just being a resident. It has nothing to do with anything. I was sitting back there. I was just going to listen. Then I started thinking, if I got a chance to say something, I should say it right now. So if you have any questions for me, I head back to my seat. And I thank you.
Thank you, and hold on just a second. Anyone have a question for Louis?
I would, but I already know my brother, so I'll talk to him later.
All right, thank you.
Louis, is this your representative right here? Thank you so much. Yes, we have.
I think it should be pointed out that
I believe there's another Republican in the audience besides him.
Okay. Very good. We're bipartisan tonight. That's all I have on the list, but has anyone that wants to say a few words? And we've got time here, so it's 10 to 8 already. We've got some time. So if anyone would care to testify, come forward and just state your name.
Good evening.
Good evening. Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
I know it's been a long day, you guys, but Julene Jackson, and I am a resident not far from here on Fremont Avenue, and I do not come before you with all of the statistics and the research, and I even missed the property one-on-one presentation. But I do come before you with a heartfelt concern. I represent a block where the entire north end of the block on both sides of the street represents foreclosure, condemnation, boarded up homes, etc., one of which was on the market for 3 years for $350,000, finally sold for $107,000. There's one on the other end of the block that's now for sale. They just moved out because they couldn't deal with it. Now, having said that, it would seem to me that in all of your infinite wisdom, with all of your skills and expertise, it would seem to me that you would have figured out, with everything else you're doing in terms of property taxes, a formula in terms of the reality of my block, which represents most of North Minneapolis, so that our property taxes would accurately reflect the reality of our living situation as opposed to continuing to go up. I find that totally ludicrous. That's what I came here tonight to share with you. Thank you.
So thank you very much. And there's a question, I think.
Okay, comment.
Very good.
I just want to make a comment, and I see Gene out there someplace representing the city. He's back in the back. It's the only one I see from the city here. not me. Exactly what you are talking about, I raised with the city assessor about 7 months ago after a meeting with community developers, and they had done a study and shown that the north side was overappraised. I think it was 56%. And the appraiser just told me that all of their figures were wrong, and that they believed their figures were correct. Now, I talked to not just that coalition of developers, that nonprofit developers that developed that study, but realtors have looked into it, and they say the same thing exactly, and yet the city insists that their figures are wrong here on the north side, which I live here, Willie lives here. I think we all know that something's wrong down there at the assessor's office because they're not taking into account the tremendous devaluation we've had on homes on the north side. And I hope Gene he claims he's listening to this, but I hope you take that back and try and get something done in that assessor's office. They did promise that they'd update them this spring, and as from what I'm hearing from realtors, they haven't been.
And I do think it's an issue. I mean, it's an issue of how do you keep up with a market that's kind of a roller coaster, but right now the direction seems to be pretty clearly down. And, you know, one of the things I thought about, though, in my area, there's been tons of houses, including, you know, a couple on my block that have been on the market for, you know, a year or more. And when there's no sale, you know, the assessor's system is based on recorded sales, and, you know, sometimes there's too much of a lag time. But, you know, a real test of a value is if you've got it on the market at a certain price and there's nobody buying, then you can't really justify, it's harder to justify that price. You don't have the data to say what the new price is. But I'm wondering if there's a more sophisticated way that we might be able to start to look at the market, particularly in these areas where the amount of vacant and boarded homes and, you know, crime considerations are really creating a very non-natural market to use market data to decide values. And I think we need to look at whether or not there are some other practices that might be used to more effectively and quickly adjust values to a situation that really is changing, because it's really also limited the ability of those homes that are for sale to get sold. If people look at the property tax statement, they go, oh, wow, I can afford the mortgage, but I can't afford that. And so I think we do need to figure out a better way of, in real time, adjusting to these kind of changes in neighborhoods that are under stress.
Thank you. And I think we have one more gentleman here that...
Thank you for being here. My name is Bob Margle. I live at 610 4th Street Northeast, so I'm a resident of Northeast Minneapolis.
If you could speak into the mic, please, a little there, pick it up a little better.
Okay. Again, Bob Margle, and I live in Northeast Minneapolis. I had You know, I just have questions when I came in here, and I was wondering whether or not this gathering this evening, if you people serve as a sounding board, or if you're advocates for change in the way these assessments are impacting people. I'm wondering if this is bipartisan, and whether or not when all this data is collected, whether there's going to be an opportunity to make changes, within this administration. Because I don't know if we can do some of the same things that happened to the transportation side. We're able to override, but again, I'm looking to see if this committee, is going to be able to go back with recommendations and maybe deliver results, because I think there's a lot of frustration out there with the taxes, and you see people's taxes, doubling, tripling, and quadrupling, I guess some people might be advocates of saying that property should show its real value, but at the same time, we can't be throwing people out in the street because they can't afford to, they can't afford to pay those taxes. Thank you very much.
Bob, thank you very much for that. And just to answer some of your questions, the committee, although it's 11-member committee, 7 Democrats and 4 Republicans, which is the same proportion of what's in the House. I think all 5 up here are Democrats tonight that are here. But, we are committed to trying to solve this problem. And we actually had 2 plans last year, actually 3 different plans. One that we passed out of the House would have provided about $444 million of property tax relief and really looked at your situation within your, like the previous testifier, that would have looked at some of these situations and would have taken the imperfections out of the system. So if you were in an area where your value was going down, we still based it, you still was on your market value, but you also based it a little bit on your ability to pay and what your household income was. That one didn't go any further than that. We had another plan that would have cut taxes $333 million, which had this homestead credit refund in there, if over 2% of your income plus. It had about $120 million of school equalization, which would have been a huge impact on property taxes. That one was vetoed. And then the one that Representative Dominguez mentioned was a scaled back one of about $120 million of relief, which included about $70 million of local government aid and about $40 million of increase on the property tax refund going directly. And that one was also vetoed. I will say that in all likelihood, the chance of another override on any type of bill is almost nil. I mean, I think we did get that on the transportation bill, and I don't think we can expect any more. But we're not ending anything by any means. And also, your ideas, just like these that we ultimately put into a citizen's property tax bill, indicates that we take this very seriously. And we've heard some good ideas, and Paul's, I can see him, he's jotting them all down here on the computer. Besides, do we have this on tape?
Yes.
And also, this meeting is also being taped. So we're looking at anything and everything, and you bring up some great points, but we are serious about it. We can only give a heck of an effort. We can't promise results because it's not all within our control, needless to say. But, and this year now with a budget deficit, it takes money to provide property tax relief, so it's going to be difficult to do, but this committee is dedicated to doing that. It's just whether or not we can actually deliver based on outside factors that are beyond our control, I guess.
Thank you. Appreciate your efforts.
You bet. Thank you. Anyone else? We have time for one more. If anyone else has not had a chance, that comments here?
Well, first of all, thank you, Chair Paul Marquardt and committee members, and I also would like to thank you folks for coming out expressing your concerns. There is a number that you can also call if you have think of some concerns. You either can do it over the phone or through the website that the tax committee has. As Representative Paul Marquardt has mentioned, these things are very complex, but there are things that we are taking very, very seriously. We know the problems that are happening in our communities. But without your voices, which we need to move things forward, things don't get done. And I'm glad that you came out. I wish there was others here that came out. Maybe we need to do a little bit more better media bringing folks out. But this was in the paper. It was in the radios. So I don't know what happened. But anyway, I want to say thank you again to the committee and you folks for coming out. And we were going back and working hard to come to some solutions that we all are going to enjoy. So thanks again for coming out. I think we have someone that wants to speak.
I want to just address again, because you were talking about solutions. I didn't give any the first time. I just gave what was going on. I'm hearing about like with the taxes, how to look at it and how to go about looking at it. So I'd like to bring up an audit every 6 months. So that gives us twice in a year, and then you probably can get a grip on where it's at, you know, because, you know, if the house hasn't been sold in 2 years, that audit is going to bring that up four times.
Thank you very much. And I would also like to echo what Representative Dominguez said. I want to, again, thanks everyone for coming out. Members and staff, thank you so much for being here. And also thanks to all those involved in setting this beautiful auditorium up for us so we could host this meeting. So we've got information here. If anyone would care to contact us whenever, please do that. We do want those comments. But thank you again, and good night.